I think it's that flood of information that we all have to deal with every day, that as ways of getting information has increased, you know, we just have to shut some of it out. And, you know, we become responsible for what we let in, and we may not be letting, you know, all of the right things in. And I think that leads to being, you know, not as well informed as we might want to be.
Recent Pew Research Center report showed that millennials, and those are defined as 18 to 31-year-olds, consume only about half as much news as people 48 and older.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to bode well for people who produce news. I think social media has taken over a lot of millennials' interest. That's really where they get the news is from their friends,
Facebook and Twitter,
right? And and less from, you know, traditional news sources where people have gone in the past. And then you get into the whole question of, you know, what sort of information are they getting, you know, from their friends and family?
Because I think the conventional wisdom among a lot of news organizations is that millennials are getting news, but they're getting it online versus traditional media from television, not so much, newspaper, print editions, not so much. But actually, the Pew report, what was interesting is that only 8% of millennials use their mobile devices to access newspapers. They're not using online to go to news sites.
Right, not to traditional, you know, news sites. I think they're finding, you know, their own way to discover news. I mean, it used to be that you had the newspaper in the morning and you could go there. You had the, you know, radio reports, you know, maybe on the hour. You had the local television report, you know, for maybe a half an hour in the afternoon, and you knew, you know, where to go to get news. Now it's hard to decide, and you just sort of pick and find your own way. And I think that's opened up, you know, the places that particularly millennials go to look for information.
I usually do this poll with many students. I say, where do you get your news? And the vast majority of them tell me from The Daily Show.
Right.
Which
yeah.
is not a news organization by any stretch.
Right. Exactly. I mean, I think Jon Stewart has talked about, you know, when he gets asked that question, are you a journalist, which he does get asked from time to time, what he says is that he comes the closest to maybe being an editorial cartoonist. But you
wonder. Big difference.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So you wonder, though, if people are watching The Daily Show for news, do they know enough about the news to get the jokes? You know, that's what I always wonder. But, you know, there's a lot of news in there, but it's certainly the take on it is satirical. And as he describes it, is more of a, you know, an editorial cartoon.
As you said earlier, the gatekeepers are gone.
Right.
Tell me more what you mean by that.
Well, it's, you know, in a traditional journalism situation, you have editors, you have producers, you know, reporters go out, they gather information, they come back and they bring it to a producer or to an editor who goes through their information and asks questions about it and vets it, you know, to the best of their ability before it gets to the public. And what's happened with the internet is, you know, there are internet sites where news sites where there are gatekeepers, but basically it's the Wild West on the internet. You know, anybody with an opinion, whether it's based on fact or not, can get it out there where people can find it. So there's no one, you know, looking over, you know, so and so's blog and saying, really, you know, is that true? How do you prove that? Can you back that up?
So what's the news consumer to do to be their own gatekeeper? How can they decide and discern what sites are reliable in terms of fact and what sites are reliable in terms of informed analysis?
Yeah, it's tough. And this information age, this explosion of information, particularly on the internet, has put a lot of pressure on the consumer to do that. I mean, with websites, you want to look at who's behind, you know, the site to begin with. That's the first thing you want to check.
And do they have an agenda?
Yes, exactly. I mean, if you, one of the things I show in my class is if you Google Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., you'll come up with a website around fourth or fifth on Google that's run by a pro-white organization, but it's
a white supremacist
group, but masquerading as a site about, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. Unless you look at it carefully, you go to, you know, who runs this site, you know, you may not know that you're getting information that does come with an agenda. So, you know, for websites, I say you got to find out who's behind it to begin with. Look to see if the information has been updated. You know, is it current? Is it filled with sort of hyperbole, you know, that speaks to having an agenda? And then I would avoid that. I mean, Wikipedia is a problem because
the information isn't vetted.
Right. Some sites, they have now, you know, they lock down and they do vet.
They might put a little disclaimer on the site.
Right, exactly, yeah. that this information is in dispute. But if you go to Wikipedia thinking that you're getting something that's been vetted and gone through a gatekeeping process, you're not. So, you know, Wikipedia may be a place you can start to do research, but it certainly shouldn't be where you end.
In terms of where people go, we're all prone to do this, I suppose, which is we go to sites that will confirm what we already believe.
Right. I teach this news literacy class in the spring, and one of the things we recommend to students is that they avoid, they call this cognitive dissonance, and it's this trait in humans to seek out information that does confirm your own beliefs. So, you know, the recommendation there is that you got to go to sites that challenge your beliefs, at least some of the time, to sort of hear the other side of it. I mean, if you listen to Rush Limbaugh every day, you might want to seek out some other information from time to time to sort of balance that. And just the idea that you become aware of this, that people do have a tendency to you know, seek out that information that confirms what I already know, what I already believe, and then that just, you know, reinforces that belief. So you kind of have to do an inventory of your beliefs and maybe biases and kind of look at your news menu and think of ways to broaden it, you know, to try to counteract that.
Diversity of sites and so on.
Absolutely,
right.
Yeah.
How much responsibility, Ray, do you think news organizations bear for this confusion? And I ask that because it seems to me more and more news organizations have drifted away from objectivity into opinion.
Yeah, and there's some debate over whether objectivity is even possible. You know, now...
Well, even balance.
Right, right, exactly. But fairness and balance, certainly. You know, like cable news, for instance. You know, you could go back and talk about how when CNN began in 82 or 3 or somewhere along in there, they created this 24-hour news cycle, and suddenly news organizations had 24 hours to fill. And that's tough without sort of straying away from the traditional news. And so I think news stations have moved in that direction also because of ratings. They have to make money. And if you put on, you know, what is basically entertainment news and it does well for you, you're going to put on more entertainment news. The other blurring of the lines, I think, is between what you mentioned, you know, fact-based reporting and opinion. And often, particularly on the cable sort of stations, you get them mixed in together. So it's not
very hard for the consumer to discern.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what we ask, you know, consumers to do in this course is look for those labels. You know, if someone is giving an opinion, it should be labeled as such.
Editorial or commentary.
Right.
Or,
exactly. Yeah. So that you know that the talking head you're listening to, you know, is giving his or her opinion. You know, we kind of use the term license to kill, like the James Bond title.
Yeah,
motivation that special agents are given this license to kill. Well, some journalists are given a license to express their opinion. But where the news stations, I think, tend to fall down sometimes is they don't label it. They don't make it clear what's opinion and what's not. I mean, if you go to the New York Times website, you'll see that things are labeled as opinion. Or editorial, and they're in their own section. But a lot of times, you know, that's not true in other outlets, and there are other besides the New York Times mm-hmm. that do that. But on cable television, you know, you could have the same person, you know, reading a fact-based news story and then shifting into expressing their opinion. And it's really hard to tell and to know the difference.
And some of the journalists who, for example, might be on a mainstream station, so-called NBC or CBS, then they will turn up on MSNBC, which is much more of an opinion-oriented station.
Right.
And it's very hard for the viewer if they see Andrea Mitchell on the evening newscast and then on Rachel Maddow
right.
to know what is factual and what is her opinion.
Yeah. What role is that reporter playing now? Are they on an opinion opinion show where they're speaking, you know, for themselves and what they believe? Or are they in the role of reporter where you've seen them in another, you know, situation talking about going out and getting information and presenting it in that manner? It's very difficult for the consumers. So much responsibility is placed on the consumer in the way the news business operates these days.
What is the price we pay, Ray, if it's true that news literacy is declining in this country in terms of both consumption of news, like if millennials really aren't interested in news as much as their elders were? What's the price we're going to pay for that, do you think?
Well, I think what we're losing is the ability to be participating, engaged citizens. I mean, it comes down to voting. I mean, that's our chief responsibility as citizens is to participate in the government. I mean, I like to stress in this class that the First Amendment, in my opinion anyway, doesn't really refer to the institutional press, but it refers to the people, that the people have the right of the press. And that you need to exercise that and be informed so that you can make decisions. There's an example that I use, a University of Maryland study in the 2010 midterm election asked voters a series of questions, things like, you know, have your taxes gone up or down or stayed the same since President Obama was elected in 2008? And, you know, a huge amount of people didn't know, you know, got that question wrong because, you know, they've either listened to things or they just have made up their own opinion, but they didn't know the real facts. And so I think we're paying the price of having the electorate be misinformed a lot when you go to cast your ballots.
It's not overstating to say that really democracy depends on an informed
citizenry. I think
citizenry.
It does. Yeah, and I think that's why it's important that you know, as a journalism school, we educate practitioners who are going to go out and do journalism. But this news literacy movement is the idea that we also have a responsibility to educate news consumers so that they know what to expect and why it's important that they stay, you know, informed.
Well, I've been speaking with Ray Fanning, who teaches radio television in the Journalism School at the University of Montana, and we've been talking about news literacy. Ray, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Sally. Thank you.